Welcome to Washington Today on C-SPAN Radio for Friday, February 26, 2021. Here are some of your headlines. House of Representatives moving towards passage of a $1.9 trillion coronavirus economic aid package, expected along party lines. It contains stimulus checks, aid to businesses, aid to state and local governments, and more. But one part of it may not survive when it reaches the Senate, an increase in the federal minimum wage to $15 per hour. That's now been determined by the Senate parliamentarian to violate the particular rules being used to speed the bill along. We'll have the latest just ahead. Also today, the FDA Advisory Committee weighing an emergency use authorization for a third coronavirus vaccine, this from Johnson & Johnson. President Joe Biden visiting Houston, Texas to survey damage from the winter storm that left millions without power and water last week. Also visiting a mass vaccination site. And the Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, continues in Orlando, Florida. One of the speakers today, Donald Trump Jr. This from Politico. Democrats are on track to pass President Joe Biden's coronavirus relief plan in the House by Friday night, a major milestone on the way to hitting their mid-March target for turning the $1.9 trillion package into law and fulfilling a key priority for the White House. The tally is expected to divide along party lines, with Republican lawmakers taking the calculated political risk of opposing the relief measure. First stop for the bill was the House Rules Committee, which sets the rules for full House debate. Testifying, Congressman John Yarmuth, a Democrat and chair of the Budget Committee.
From the start, we have been upfront that the sole purpose of the budget resolution was to provide the option of using reconciliation to deliver critical relief and enact the American Rescue Plan. It was always Plan B. Plan A was always to come up with a bipartisan solution. When the determination was made that that was not going to be possible in time to provide desperately needed urgent assistance to the American people and the American economy, we embarked on this process. And we are in a race against time. As the chairman mentioned, this week we passed the 500,000 death mark from coronavirus. More Americans have died in the last year from this disease than died in World War I, World War II, and the Vietnam War combined. So while debate is important and deliberation is important, we also need to get on with it. We have the plan to beat the virus, to safely reopen the schools and quickly and equitably distribute vaccines. We have the plan to deliver immediate relief to working families and small businesses and support communities struggling with the economic fallout. As the chairman mentioned, the polling on this is overwhelming. 76% this week of Americans support this plan, including 60% of Republicans. There are validators across the spectrum. The U.S. Conference of Mayors overwhelmingly in support of this legislation. Chairman Jerome Powell of the Federal Reserve strongly in favor of this legislation. Just this week, 150 top CEOs from around the country strongly support this legislation. The list goes on and on and on because virtually everyone recognizes how critical this is, not just to stop the pandemic right now and to get us returning to normality, but to provide for the foundation for an economic recovery, which is going to take a long time.
Congressman John Yarmuth, the Budget Committee Chair. Also appearing before the House Rules Committee on Friday, the Budget Committee ranking Republican Jason Smith.
This has been nothing short of a partisan circus meant to do really three things. Enact a radical agenda, do so quickly to notch some wins for the president's buddies, and do it with as little transparency as possible. This is really the urgency here. Remember the old saying from Speaker Pelosi, we have to pass the bill so you can find out what's in it? That's the case. That's what you need to poll after this bill passes with the American people. You won't get 70%. Well, we know that's what's in this one. The president and our colleagues want to push this bill out through Congress before the American people have time to realize what's in it. That less than 9% of the bailout actually goes towards crushing COVID-19 and putting shots in people's arms. Or that this bailout would destroy job after job and increase the cost to put food on the table, clothes on your back, or heat in your home, hurting over 31 million senior citizens on fixed incomes. Or that roughly $1 trillion in COVID funding remains unspent from the five prior bipartisan packages. or that the economy is estimated to return to pre-pandemic levels of real GDP this year without any further so-called stimulus spending. In fact, the highest GDP in 15 years is predicted. And when all is said and done, if this massive spending bailout becomes law, CBO has confirmed it will cost $36 billion in cuts annually to Medicare.
Congressman Jason Smith, the relief bill would provide $1,400 in direct payments to millions of people, plus billions of dollars for vaccines and COVID-19 testing, reopening schools, aid to state and local governments, aiding the restaurant and airline industries, and extending emergency unemployment benefits. Also, more tax breaks for lower-income earners and families with children. One prominent provision in the House bill, raising the federal minimum wage to $15 per hour by 2025, not expected to be in the final version that President Biden signed into law. That's because the Senate parliamentarian says that it doesn't comply with the complicated rules that govern budget bills in the Senate. Congressional reporter Scott Wong with The Hill explains.
Elizabeth McDonough serves as sort of the Senate referee, and she holds enormous power. She's not widely known to the general public, but in this case, she made a major decision last night informing the Democratic and Republican staff that she had ruled that the $15 minimum wage is not really relevant to the Democrats' $1.9 trillion COVID relief package and therefore can't be included in this package through the budget reconciliation process. That's this arcane process that allows Democrats to pass something with just a simple majority rather than that much higher 60-vote threshold, which would require Democrats to bring on Republican votes. In this case, through reconciliation, they can pass it with a simple majority and with just Democrats in the Senate. So it's significant because this had been a number one, one of the top priorities for Democrats as they sought to take back, the House and Senate in recent elections. Certainly the White House, this was a promise to the progressive base, which is why you're seeing Nancy Pelosi today saying House Democrats will keep the $15 wage hike in the House bill when they bring it to the floor today. Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats believe they have to show the progressive base that they're fighting for them, that they understand that this was one of the reasons why voters sent them to the majority. And so we're going to see this play out over the next week or so. It's going to be a game of ping pong where the House will send this bill over with the $15 minimum wage included, and then the House will then have to somehow strip it out.
The Senate.
And send it back over.
The Senate will have to strip it up.
Then the Senate will have to strip it out and send it back over to the House.
Scott Wong is a congressional reporter with The Hill. In a statement, the White House said that President Biden, who proposed the $15 minimum wage as part of his American Rescue Plan, is disappointed, but that he urges Congress to move quickly to pass the relief bill. He also said he'll work with leaders in Congress to determine the best path forward on the minimum wage. That message as well from the House Rules Committee chairman today, Democrat James McGovern.
Our bill also finally gives the 27 million workers the raise they have deserved for quite some time. Sadly, it seems likely that Senate rules might cause this provision to be removed when it is considered there. But I want the American people to know this. We will not stop fighting to make a minimum wage increase a reality. No one who works full time in the richest nation on this planet should live in poverty.
Congressman James McGovern, Democrat Rules Committee Chair. Later, the House Republican leader Kevin McCarthy asked about the minimum wage.
The House bill still contains the $15 minimum wage hike, though there's obviously reconciliation problems in the Senate.
Well, welcome to the press conference.
You said that it will cost 3.7 million jobs. Has your conference discussed any level of minimum wage hike? Do you think that there should not be one at all? Should it stay where it was since 2009?
You know, there are some Republicans in the Senate that I know from a Cotton and Romney went out with something. I personally have a difference opinion. Look, I come from Bakersfield, California. What I think locals should be able to determine that. It's different than New York and San Francisco. We haven't had that internal debate yet. I think there's a place that we can solve this problem. Unfortunately, the Democrats seem the only reason they're keeping it in for politics. I mean, the true question would be to Nancy Pelosi. She knows it will not survive in the Senate because the parliamentarian already told her that. So is she keeping it in the bill to keep her payoffs exactly what I named the bill? This is for a progressive wing of the party who says they will not vote for the bill unless they have that in there. Now, is that to deal with COVID? How many small businesses have already closed? How much more pain will you put on? All the studies show you're actually going to lose more jobs. Look what happened in Seattle when they did. It actually cost people their jobs who need it the most, those who are just lower entry level. So to me, it's just more politics, and it's wrong because, you know, in the Senate, it's not going to survive.
You mean that she's keeping it in the bill to force Republicans to vote against
the memo? No. She's keeping it in the bill to try to get the progressives or the Democrats to pass the bill. Otherwise, the bill will fail.
The House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy at his weekly news conference. As for whether the Senate could pass a standalone minimum wage increase in a chamber split 50 Democrats and 50 Republicans, NPR notes that Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema are the only Democrats who have publicly opposed the idea, but many others have been selectively silent on the issue. And already some suggested alternatives, the Hill newspaper reporting that Republican Senator Josh Hawley on Friday announced a plan to tax big companies that don't pay their workers at least $15 per hour. An alternative minimum wage approach also put forth by Senate Budget Committee Chair Bernie Sanders, independent, and Senate Finance Committee Chair Ron Wyden, Democrat. You're listening to Washington Today. Food and Drug Administration Advisory Committee unanimously approving the coronavirus vaccine from Johnson & Johnson. It's the third COVID-19 vaccine that could be available in the U.S. if the FDA agrees with the advisory panel. The others from Pfizer and Moderna, and the J&J vaccine, the first one requiring only one dose. During today's review session held virtually, Dr. Johan van Hoof, infectious diseases and vaccines global head at Janssen Biotech, the pharmaceutical division of Johnson & Johnson, explaining the study.
Janssen's single-dose vaccine has demonstrated early onset of protection against symptomatic COVID-19. Particularly important in the context of an outbreak, we observed 85% vaccine efficacy against severe COVID-19 globally, including the United States, at least 28 days after vaccination. For this secondary endpoint, the effect was consistent across all geographic regions, including in South Africa, where 95% of the strains were an emergent variant of the B1351 lineage. Importantly, the primary analysis, there were no COVID-19 related hospitalizations in the vaccine group versus 16 in the placebo group. There were no COVID-19 related deaths in the vaccine group compared to 5 in the placebo group. In the United States, we have shown 72% vaccine efficacy at least 28 days post-vaccination. We enrolled more than 19,000 participants in the U.S. and paid particular attention to include a diverse population. Our primary endpoint was achieved with 66% vaccine efficacy for moderate to severe critical COVID-19 for the overall study population after day 28. And protection was observed as early as 2 weeks after vaccination, and we saw consistent efficacy across age, comorbidities, race, and ethnic subgroups. These results are particularly important when one considers when and where we studied our vaccine.
Dr. Johan van Hoof with Janssen Biotech. It's part of Johnson & Johnson at today's FDA advisory panel meeting. The panel is officially the Vaccines and Related Biological Products Advisory Committee, voting 22-0 to recommend the J&J vaccine for emergency use. The FDA not bound by the group's recommendation, but often follows them. Overall, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention saying 70.5 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine have been administered now in the U.S. More than 14% of the U.S. population has received at least one dose. That's 47 million people, 7% of the population getting two shots where it's required. That's 23 million people. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky also saying today that case data may be showing a new disturbing trend.
Over the last few weeks, cases and hospital admissions in the United States had been coming down since early January, and deaths had been declining in the past week. But the latest data suggests that these declines may be stalling, potentially leveling off at still a very high number. We at CDC consider this a very concerning shift in the trajectory. The most recent seven-day average of cases, approximately 66,350, is higher than the average I shared with you on Wednesday. In fact, cases have been increasing for the past 3 days compared to the prior week. And while deaths tend to fluctuate more than cases and hospital admissions, the most recent seven-day average, approximately 2,000 per day, is slightly higher than the seven-day average earlier in the week. We are watching these concerning data very closely to see where they will go over the next few days, but it's important to remember where we are in the pandemic. Things are tenuous. Now is not the time to relax restrictions. Although we have been experiencing large declines in cases and admissions over the past 6 weeks, these declines follow the highest peak we have experienced in the pandemic. So I want to be clear, cases, hospital admissions, and deaths all remain very high, and the recent shift in the pandemic must be taken extremely seriously.
Dr. Rochelle Walensky is CDC director at today's White House virtual briefing with the response team for the COVID crisis. President Joe Biden making his first trip as president today to a major disaster site. That's in Texas, in Houston, at the Harris County Emergency Operations Center, getting a briefing about last week's winter storm that pummeled the state, causing massive power outages and frozen pipes. It left millions without power or clean water. The president was accompanied by the governor, Greg Abbott, and welcomed by the county judge, Lena Hidalgo.
It has been an incredible team effort. Mr. President, your support means the world to our community, and we welcome you with pride to our Emergency Operations Center for our briefing.
It's a hell of an operation. It's probably the best one in the country. There's a single place. But thank you for what you're doing. And all I did, I got a call before he asked the question. I just said yes.
He said yes before he even asked the question.
But you're brilliant children. You're saving people's lives, and you're doing, as my mother would say, sure, you're doing God's work, kid. You're doing God's work.
President Biden at that center in Houston with the governor, Greg Abbott. One of the other officials there to brief him was Nim Kidd, chief of the Texas Division of Emergency Management, who talked about the ongoing water problems.
In addition to the water delivered here, we have literally delivered almost 12 million bottles of water. We continue to push the resources out, and we've got to keep doing that. We talk with our partners at the Red Cross. They're talking to us now about the boomerang effect. And so I think a picture is worth a thousand words. Again, very grateful for the partnership with Acting Administrator Fenton.
You gave me that picture.
Boss preempted you on the pictures? Yes, sir.
No, but it's important. Go ahead, go through it.
Yes, sir. So the pink-colored counties are the ones that are declared for individual assistance. The rest of them have Category B. Again, very grateful for that. But when you compare the days of sub-freezing temperatures here, up to 7 days of sub-freezing temperatures, we have a lot of families and businesses and, importantly, schools that have not yet been able to submit their damage assessments to us. And so while we see our boil water notices are still across a lot of our state in declared and undeclared counties, what we know is that means the water comes up out of the ground, it gets into the treatment center, and it gets into the distribution line. We still don't have a count from the meter to the kitchen sink of how many homes have been damaged and destroyed with broken pipes. We want to continue to work closely with our local partners grabbing that assessment and with our federal partners to get that information to you so we can make the best decision possible for all of us. We talked with our school district superintendents last night. Texas has about 1,200 independent school districts. 75% of those, a little over 700, were able to report to us last night that over 4,600 of their buildings had broken water pipes in them. We've got a long way to go, Mr. President. I know we can get through this together, but we've just got to keep marching forward.
Nim Kidd with the Texas Emergency Management Division with President Biden in Houston. The president also visiting a local food bank and a mass coronavirus vaccination site run by the federal government at NRG Park. On Wall Street, the Dow was down 469 points. NASDAQ up 72, S&P down 18. Federal Communications Commission approving guidelines for new internet subsidies during the pandemic. Low-income families can get $50 per month. Families on tribal lands, $75 per month. And United Airlines has been fined more than $49 million for fraud on postal service contracts for transportation of international mail. Justice Department says the scheme was perpetrated by former employees of United's cargo division who submitted false delivery scan data of when the airline took possession of the mail receptacles and when they delivered them from 2012 through 2015. Washington Today continues in a minute. And welcome back to Washington Today. A few more headlines. The U.S. House passing a conservation bill today aimed at preserving land and water in Arizona, Colorado, California, and Washington State, mostly along party lines. Democrats, yes. Republicans, no. The bill would prevent new oil, gas, and mineral extraction on more than 1.2 million acres of public land. It would also preserve 1,000 river miles. A new report from the United Nations Climate Change Agency saying that plans proposed by countries to meet their goals under the Paris Agreement fall far short of what is needed to limit the planet's warming. Those goals, those plans, they say, would lower emissions by only 0.5% by 2030, and what's needed is lowering them by 45%. And as expected, a declassified U.S. intelligence report released today, it says that Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman approved the killing of U.S.-based journalist and Saudi critic Jamal Khashoggi at the Saudi consulate in Istanbul in October 2018. The report reads, "We base this assessment on the Crown Prince's control of decision-making in the kingdom, the direct involvement of a key advisor and members of Mohammed bin Salman's protective detail in the operation, and the Crown Prince's support for using violent measures to silence dissidents abroad, including Khashoggi." The U.S. Treasury Department today announcing new sanctions against Saudi officials that the report says were involved in the killing. Some more details from the Pentagon about the airstrike in Syria Thursday night, approved by President Biden. John Kirby is the Pentagon press secretary.
Two F-15E Strike Eagles dropped seven precision-guided munitions, totally destroying nine facilities and partially destroying two facilities, making them functionally destroyed. The structures were located at the Abu Kamal terrorist entry control point, located near the Syria-Iraq border on the Syrian side. This location is known to facilitate Iranian-aligned militia group activity. We have preliminary details about casualties on site, but I won't be able to discuss additional details at this time, because our battle damage assessment is ongoing. This response was conducted together with diplomatic measures, including consultation with coalition partners. The department notified congressional leadership before the strikes. Administration officials have been briefing at the member and staff level today, and there will be a full classified briefing early next week. As we made clear last night, and I think through President Biden's order, he made clear that the United States will act to protect American and coalition personnel and our security interests in the region.
The Pentagon Press Secretary John Kirby about the Thursday night airstrike against militias in Syria, said to be backed by Iran. Some critics of this operation today, including Democratic Senators Tim Kaine and Chris Murphy. Murphy writing, "Congress should hold this administration to the same standard it did prior administrations and require clear legal justifications for military action, especially inside theaters like Syria, where Congress has not explicitly authorized any American military action." Democratic Congressman Ro Khanna saying there was absolutely no justification for the strike, and quote, "This makes President Biden the seventh consecutive U.S. president to order strikes in the Middle East." The Conservative Political Action Conference, or CPAC, is continuing its annual get-together this year in Orlando, Florida. CPAC started in 1974. It calls itself the largest and most influential gathering of conservatives in the world. One speaker today was Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. He opened poking a little fun at the controversy over his recent trip to Mexico with his family, this while millions of Texans were without electricity due to a winter storm.
I gotta say, Orlando is awesome. that's not as nice as Cancun. But it's nice.
Senator Ted Cruz later telling reporters the trip to Mexico was a mistake. Today, he also told CPAC that former President Donald Trump will continue to play a very big role in the Republican Party.
And you know what? There are a whole lot of voices in Washington that want to just erase the last 4 years. Want to go back to the world before where we had government of the lobbyists, by the lobbyists, and for the lobbyists. Where the Republicans' compelling message was, Republicans, we waste less. And they look at Donald J. Trump and they look at the millions and millions of people inspired who went to battle fighting alongside President Trump, and they're terrified. And they want him to go away. Let me tell you this right now, Donald J. Trump ain't going anywhere. And the Republican Party is not the party just of the country clubs. The Republican Party is the party of steel workers and construction workers and pipeline workers and taxi cab drivers and cops and firefighters and waiters and waitresses and the men and women with calluses on their hands who are working for this country. That is our party, and these deplorables are here to stay.
Senator Ted Cruz today at CPAC in Florida. Several Republican senators, House members, and governors were in attendance, but a few big names in the party were not there. The Senate Minority Leader, Mitch McConnell, Congresswoman Liz Cheney, third-ranking Republican in the U.S. House, and former Vice President Mike Pence. Another speaker today, Donald Trump Jr., son of the former president. He criticized President Biden, said his father is the future of the Republican Party, and also took a couple of shots at Congresswoman Cheney.
In the first 30 days of Joe Biden's presidency, all of the things that I said would come true in the book Liberal Privilege that I wrote last summer are happening. We listened to months of media telling us that Joe Biden, he's a moderate, don't worry. He's not going to end energy. He's not going to end pipelines, which is partially correct. He's not going to end Russian pipelines. He's only going to end American pipelines. The Russian ones are just fine. They're going to cave to China. No, that was never going to happen. Of course it happened. You think that billion-dollar investment in Hunter came for free? No, the Chinese have a great return on investment. But guys, more importantly, who would have thought that within 33 days we'd be bombing the Middle East again? I would have. Oh no, guys, come on, the military-industrial complex, I'm surprised it took them 33 days. I guess they waited till the first month so they couldn't say that was part of the first 30, but it was only shortly thereafter where we started bombing the Middle East. Speaking of bombing the Middle East, have you seen Liz Cheney's poll numbers? No, listen, the one thing I'll say for Liz Cheney is I'm sure she has a lot of bipartisan support, because if there's one thing that she and Joe Biden definitely want to do, it's bomb the Middle East. Everything else is a disaster. Everything else is just rhino policies, the kinds of policies that put the Republican Party in a position where they needed a Donald Trump.
That's Donald Trump Jr. today at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference in Orlando, Florida. His father, the former president, is scheduled to address the group on Sunday at 3:30 p.m. Eastern. It'll be live on C-SPAN television. You can also listen on the free C-SPAN radio app. Just choose the C-SPAN live stream. Ahead of that, a golden statue of former President Trump unveiled at CPAC. It shows him wearing a suit jacket and red tie, American flag shorts and flip-flops, and he's holding a wand. Well, thanks for joining us on Washington Today. Download the free C-SPAN radio app to listen on the go. And remember, this program available as a podcast. Get it wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Hope you have a good night and weekend.